shall not yield that right to any power on earth.
Hi, I'm Scott McKay. The world is at, and I am your host on The Tipping Point. On Revolution Radio, where every Monday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, we bring you the latest in this ensuing takedown of this global criminal empire.
That's an image of strength.
You'll get the raw, hard truth here on The Tipping Point. So come join us Mondays, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, in Studio B at revolution.radio.
Good day, wherever you are in this world. I hope you're having a great day here listening to Revolution Radio. Everybody asks for this. Revolution Radio. Where the information never sleeps.
It is sad to think that sooner or later those you love will do the same for you. And you may have thought it tragic, not to mention other adjectives, to think of all the weeping they will do. But don't you worry, no more ashes, no more sackcloth, and an armband made of black cloth will someday nevermore adorn a sleeve. For if the bomb that drops on you gets your friends and neighbors too, there'll be nobody left behind to grieve, and we will all go together when we go. What a comforting fact that is to know. Universal bereavement, an inspiring achievement. Yes, we all will go together when we go. We will all go together when we go. All suffused with an incandescent glow. No one will have the endurance to collect on his insurance. Lloyd's of London will be loaded when they go. We will all fry together when we fry. We'll be French fried potatoes by and by. There will be no more misery when the world is our rotisserie. Yes, we all will fry together when we fry. We will all bake together when we bake. There'll be nobody present at the wake. With complete participation in that grand incineration, nearly 3 billion hunks of well-done steak. We will all char together when we char. And let there be no moaning of the bar. Just sing out a te deum when you see that ICBM, and the party will be come as you are.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal. Before I introduce my special guest today, who is among my favorite denizens of planet Earth, who will be addressing issues related to the coronavirus pandemic, the vaccines, and the global agenda, let me mention one political development of note. Republican electors in 7 states, Pennsylvania, Georgia, Michigan, Wisconsin, Arizona, Nevada, and New Mexico, cast alternative slates of votes for President Trump on December 14th, as the certified Democrat electors in the same states cast votes for former Vice President Biden. Sending more than one slate of electors is not unheard of, said Michelle Maddock, Michigan Republican at large national elector, in an email release. It's our duty to the people of Michigan and to the U.S. Constitution to send another slate of electors if the election is in controversy or dispute, and clearly it is. The Republicans in other states explained their rationale in similar terms, underlining that casting their votes would preserve Trump's legal claim for the election as the president pursues legal challenges to the outcome, which, of course, are extensive and ongoing. Everyone can read this on my blog at jamesfetzer.org. Now, it's a delight for me to introduce my guest today, who has original cast of mind. She's very perceptive. She was among the very first to identify exactly what was going on at the Sandy Hook Elementary School false flag shooting as a community effort. It was fascinating, a capstone event involving the whole community. She produced a documentary, Sandy Hook in 2, 3, 4, and 5 Dimensions, that many of us found just really spectacular for its insights, where it even began on a bus headed to Sandy Hook with an expert marksman explaining how the idea that this 120-pound weakling who had no evident experience with weapons whatsoever could have performed the feats of shooting that were beyond belief, that even highly qualified marksmen could not have had the kill-to-target ratio. Many of you will know whereof I speak, therefore, and it's just a great pleasure to welcome to the Raw Deal, Sophia Smallstorm. Sophia, welcome.
Jim, that's so nice of you to speak like that about me and my work, and you have a very good memory, I must say.
Well, your work is very memorable. You make it easy, Sophia. You make it easy. And when we had a recent conversation and you began to explain to me what's going on with the vaccine agenda and transhumanism, I knew this was terribly important to share with everyone I could reach. And this is by far the best medium I have to accomplish that goal. So I'm just really glad you could join me today to discuss these issues.
Well, Jim, it's my pleasure, and I really look forward to airing thoughts. And I'm just letting people know that I am not a researcher in a lab that wears a white coat, and I don't have advanced degrees in biochemistry or any such thing. But, you know, when you start looking into a subject long enough and you look at it from many, many angles through different disciplines, you end up being, let's just say, self-educated, right? And it's not bad to be self-educated, especially if you exercise discernment, as I've tried to do. I try to answer questions that I pose to myself, you know, like, what is such and such? And I'm going to bring this up because there are lots of terms that are slung around. I mean, what is a gene versus a chromosome? Does anybody know? Can anybody just tell me right off the bat, you know, give me exactly what the definition of each one of those is? I don't think so. I think people are used to hearing certain terms and they don't know how those terms, what those terms really are and how they work in the body, right?
Go right ahead, Sophia. Yes.
So one of the things, I'm just going to start with a very banal kind of observation. And everywhere I go, I'm always struck by this. I was in the bank the other day, and I saw all these people dutifully wearing masks. And it just struck me that there will be a day, Jim, if this goes on, there will be a day that showing your face, your facial features, will be considered indecent exposure. Just like if you peel off your bathing suit at the beach, the face will become indecent. It will be already, the masks are a convention. People are, they've taken to them like it's a form of another article of clothing, fashion masks. You know what I mean?
Sadly, I do. And of course, the effects of wearing masks are permanent, including irreversible brain damage, because you're depleting your red blood cells of the oxygen they need to keep you functioning. And the damage is especially acute for children, young people who are growing and need all the oxygen they can get for normal development. So we're producing a generation of brain damaged children.
Yeah. And yesterday, for the very first time in my life, or actually yesterday and the day before, I took an Uber ride. I had to go get my car, and that was the way to go. It was the only way I could get to the place. And these Uber drivers told me that not only do they have to wear masks and their passengers, but they're sent all these disinfectants. Uber sends it to them in the mail. And they have to spray their vehicles all the time. And guess what? They have to drive with the windows down. So here I am. I'm wearing one of my breathable muslin organic cotton face masks, which are very comfortable, and you can buy them with little labels. I'm throwing an ad out for my Avatar Products website, so you'll see on the right side of the website you can get a mask that says useless placebo, COVID zombie, or walking biohazard. And these are ways of kind of educating people, you know, a sly, subtle way of educating someone who faces you. But he had the windows down, this Uber driver, and I asked him, can we close the windows? No, we have to drive with the windows down. And so I had to take, I had a towel because I was going to pick up my car and I wanted to sit. I always prop myself up on a towel. I put this black towel over my head with a mask. I looked like I was from, you know, Iraq with a burqa in his back seat. And they are shrouding us. They are shrouding humanity. This is all part of taking away individuality and resilience. And once again, it's going, Jim, what I want to bring up on the show is the standardization of humanity. They are standardizing us so that they can control us better. And anytime you look at, you know, manufacturing, a factory works best when all the parts are standard, they're identical, and everything fits together. And then there's less room for, you know, misfitting and corrections that have to be made. So I wanted to bring up, have you heard, this is as of about maybe 8 weeks ago, everybody was making a big fuss about how this PCR test had a fragment that it was looking for that was the absolute match in terms of the what are they called? Nucleotides to chromosome 8, human chromosome 8. Did you hear about this?
Go right ahead.
Okay. So everybody's all over the internet. Oh, yeah, the PCR test, which is supposedly the diagnostic test for COVID or one of them, and not ever supposed to be used in a diagnostic setting or application. But anyway, it looks for chromosome 8, among other tags. These are ways that you can enumerate or name sequences of materials that make up the body, protein sequences, nucleotide sequences, whatever. I'm just ad-libbing here to make it simple. So one of these sequences that it finds the sequences in DNA are termed with letters A, T, C, and G. And these sequences denote amino acids and whatnot that are the building blocks of your proteins. And proteins are the building blocks of the body. So one of the sequences is the exact match for human chromosome 8. And the conclusion was, duh, everybody is a human being. Everybody has 23 pairs of chromosomes, and everybody's got chromosome 8 because you're a human. You have it. So I said to myself, well, what's chromosome 8? I don't know. Do you know what chromosome 8 is, Jim?
Not off the top of my head.
All right. So I just Googled it, and it's the chromosome that relates to brain development. Now, let's look at those two words very carefully, because this is what I do when I think. I go brain, brain development. And then I'm saying to myself, all right, this PCR test, which I think it's a CDC document, it shows you all these different tags that the PCR test will produce when it searches in your body, in your sap, in your tissue, when you take the test. So then it occurred to me, okay, what if the PCR test, which has to be taken frequently, Jim, on a frequent basis, some athletes are having to take it every day. What if the PCR test is a sampling of your genetic material? And every time you take it, it pulls some tissue out and it samples, it takes samples, it looks, it searches, and it organizes what it has in terms of data that goes on the blockchain. So it's sampling for your chromosome 8, my chromosome 8, which are different, right? So your chromosome 8 relates to your brain development, my chromosome 8 to my brain development. So I said to myself, what if the PCR test and all the little samples it takes on a regular basis of each of us who submit ourselves to that test, what if they're building on the blockchain this genome? They're mapping the genome of each person who is tested because they're going to give us all digital IDs. All of this is blockchain, you know, language. So they will be perhaps putting on the blockchain every so often updates of your genome, Jim, and they'll have it to the minute, to the day, to the week, if we're taking this test on a frequent basis. So if they map your genome on the blockchain and my genome, then when you go and get your COVID vaccination, we know from the mRNA personalized medicine that Moderna CEO has been bragging about that this is called personalized therapy. And I'll explain that in a minute. But the idea of gene-altering medicine is such that it sends your body instructions to do things differently. So after they have, or as they map your genome, when you trot into some center to get your COVID shot, have you gone to Home Depot to buy paint? What they do in there is you pick your color from all the swatches that are on the walls and you pick the brand and the shade that you want. You take it up to the man at the center console and you show it to him and he says, okay. And then he goes to these spigots and he pounds on this one and that one and each spigot releases these increments of color, base color and then tints, and he makes up your shade then and there. He can make any shade out of hundreds and hundreds of shades. Now, what if that COVID shot is created in the same way? They simply generate it based on your genomic map that they have. And the point is to standardize you. So they want to standardize each person by way of these instruction-carrying vaccines, which are not vaccines in any traditional sense. They are invasions of the human body performing a kind of metabolic mind control, okay? And then you get your shot, your neighbor gets his. Each one is going to be very different, tailored to your specific genome. And you will then be standardized. This is transhumanism. The goal of transhumanism is to take away our individuality, our uniqueness, and make us all standard, and then match us up with AI and machines. Okay, I'm going to let you talk.
No, Sophia, this is your time. You have so much to share with us. The second hour, we'll be taking questions from the audience. We'll have plenty of opportunity for debate. I want you to lay it all out, especially. What you're really describing is a going beyond the Chinese model where we have a social merit system, and if you fail to conform, you can suffer severe punishment, which is why they want to have all currency to be digital. That makes it easier to control, a simple illustration of which is found in the brilliant film Enemy of the State with Gene Hackman and Will Smith, where just having their credit cards cut off caused them considerable distress. But I believe you're talking about an effort to model humanity after the social insects, the bees, the wasps, the ants, all of whose behavior is instinctual, where they do not have the opportunity to act in accordance with their own preferences, as do human beings. So in a fashion, what they're seeking to do is to deprive us of free will, of the opportunity to act in accordance with our own preferences, absent compulsion and constraint, by actually altering our DNA to make us more like the social insects.
Right, but even on a biological level, to make us make our proteins differently. So here's the basic crux of that. mRNA, I'm going to quote Stefan Boncel, CEO of Moderna, messenger RNA is at the core of Moderna's drug development process. Moderna is pioneering mRNA drugs that are believed to be able to direct the body to produce any protein of interest, including antibodies and other proteins that can create therapeutic activity. Boncel said mRNA is an information molecule. So it's basically software, and that's what they call it. Moderna calls this mRNA type of vaccination the software of life. So it's hijacking your biology, and people don't appreciate what proteins really are. Proteins do so much in the body. They are the workhorses of the body. Imagine a house being built, right? So we got the architect who strolls to the site and he says, yeah, these are my plans. Look at my cool design. Then you have the contractor, the general contractor. And he says, yeah, we'll build this. But without a crew, without a construction crew, nothing can be done. And proteins are the equivalent of the construction crew of the body, plus the materials. Proteins make up the wood and plaster and whatever else you have, brick, stone of the body. They are the crew that runs all the machinery that puts all of that stuff together. You can't build without a construction crew. You cannot build without proteins. Proteins are even enzymes that signal and perform the act of messaging and instructing and you know, catalyzing and galvanizing the body to do various things that it has to do in its biological maintenance and upkeep and creation. So when you tell the cells how to make other kinds of proteins or make different kinds of proteins or put this protein here in this particular construction, you're hijacking biology. This is non-human instructions, right? Now, here's another kicker to think about. The mRNA vaccines are not vaccines in the traditional sense, no matter what you think of those, whether you think they're not safe and effective or yes, they're safe and effective. I'm not even going there. mRNA vaccines are software. They are an operating system being introduced into the body, into the cells. They are invading the DNA of the cells and giving different orders. DNA codes for proteins. And they are telling that DNA, shut up, here, do it this way. So these vaccine instructions are hijacking your cellular brain, right? And these vaccine companies have already wrestled for themselves legal immunity. So this COVID shot is the first extremely broad effort to GMO human beings. And once the shot is received, you cannot extract those instructions. Those new instructions overwrite your protein coding, your genetic brain. They completely hijack, they transpose the intelligence in your body, the biological intelligence. They take its place, and you can't erase that. You can't eradicate it. You can't pull it out. You can't take something to counter it. Now it's in you. And the other thing, Jim, that's astonishing is when this software gets in you, then guess who owns you? The company that made the software.
Let me just offer an historical perspective on what you're observing here. In my extensive research in AI and cognitive science, I founded an international journal, Minds and Machines, that became a huge success worldwide. But it was odd because most of my contributors supported the computational model according to which human minds operate on the same principles as computers. I, however, was among a small number of critics of that model, where I demonstrated in my work that human minds operate on different principles than digital machines, and therefore it's not possible to bridge the gap. So you cannot take a digital machine and turn it into a human being. But what you're describing is the alternative approach of taking human beings and turning them into something akin to digital machines.
Yeah, to downgrade them, to standardize them, to introduce new artificial intelligence into them on the level of genes and chromosomes. So when the PCR test is given to somebody, I believe it samples for a lot of different, let's just say, genomic pieces, segments, genomic information. And then that's immediately put on the blockchain under your digital ID, because this is all part of biocapitalism. The humans and nature are going to be made into products for financial markets. This is the new thing. We saw them do it with loans and mortgages. Now they're going to do, Jim, this is what I think, and I could be wrong because I'm not a financial expert, but I just want to throw this out there for people to ruminate on. In that housing, you know, crash that we saw a decade or so ago, they had done something that was basically financial fraud. They had taken your property number, which is your assessor's parcel number. That's a number that your that what you bought is given. And then there's a loan number or mortgage number, and they separated those in the world of finance, and they made all these wheelings and dealings with mortgages and bought and sold and traded them. And that separation, that creation of another number that then became the basis of a of stuff in the financial markets, separate from the property itself, that was basically very illegal and led to this explosion ultimately. It imploded on itself. So I think they're going to do that with human beings. We, through not just 5G but 6G, are going to be given a digital presence on the blockchain. So the beauty, I'll put that in quotes, of 5G is that it is, because it works through light technology and not through transmissions over copper wires, there's no delay.
Sophia, we're coming up against a hard break. So, you know, very nice point. We'll return after this break with Sophia Smallstorm. Really fascinating stuff. I'm so glad you are here. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
I will defend myself against their tyranny. Number three is my radio broadcast. I'm squarely in front of the public all the time, and they all know what's going on.
For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence.
Hello, my name is John Wayne, and I do a broadcast here at freedomslips.com, revolution.radio, called The Unequivocal Truth, DEFCON 1.
Freedom and fear are at war.
And folks, I assure you, we are in defense condition one, as we journey perilously through this paradigm that we currently reside in. And I ask that you join me every Saturday, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, for The Unequivocal Truth, DEFCON 1.
We shall never surrender.
Oscar's freeze. That's your cerebral cortex looking for an answer it doesn't have.
See? Even your brain knows you're screwed.
The blood is filling with adrenaline right now. Whether you know it or not. Your heart's beating fast. It's getting a little harder to breathe. The neurobiological system is telling it to run. But your knees are too weak to move.
Fear is not real. The only place that fear can exist is in our thoughts of the future. It is a product of our imagination, causing us to fear things that do not at present and may not ever exist. That is near insanity. Do not misunderstand me. Danger is very real, but fear is a choice. We are all telling ourselves a story.
You're listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. 100% listener-supported radio. Reporting the danger, unafraid, right here, where information never sleeps. Revolution, Revolution, Radio!
Como va? This is Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. I pulled some strings and got you front row seats to my new show, The Perfect Triangle, live Friday, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Revolution Radio Studio A. The Perfect Triangle is equilateral, three sides of the same length. In an angry, bipolar world, three perfect sides reveal many truths.
Body, mind, and spirit.
Thought, word, and deed.
Conspiracy, propaganda, and truth.
Natural health, allopathic tyranny, and your body.
Freedom, globalism, and sovereign nations.
And so much more. Each week, the Perfect Triangle will blast through fake news lies, champion the natural way and natural law, unravel the Orwellian deceptions of our corrupt government, reveal the satanic evil of globalist banks and transnational corporations. Tune in every Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern, to Revolution Radio Studio A for thoughtful discussions with free thinkers. Your calls are always welcome. The Perfect Triangle, with Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. Join me, won't you?
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job, that Osama had nothing to do with it, that the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes, that Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and freedomslips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal, with my special featured guest today, Sophia Smallstorm. Sophia, during a previous conversation, we were talking about what you were discovering about sexual identity and the role that's being played here with, all kinds of weird developments, such as children. It's even being proposed now that children being given hormone blockers until they can decide their own sex before they've even passed through puberty. I mean, and the idea of, creating, as it were, a sexless society, which is bizarre in the extreme. I hope you'll offer a few of your observations in this area, which I believe will be of extreme interest to the audience.
Well, Jim, I would like to do that, but can we finish the digital twin that 6G and 5G are going to make, and
absolutely,
the whole blockchain thing? saying?
100%, yes.
Okay, so I was saying when the break came that they're using 5G. They want to use 5G so that they get instantaneous data delivery to the blockchain. So every time you lift a finger in your house, all kinds of sensors, no matter what you do, even maybe what you think, sensors will relay that instantaneously in real time to the blockchain. So on the blockchain, you're going to be virtualized into this digital twin. There will be a shadow digital self of you. And this, I think, is that financial separation of the warm person, the warm body being, and this digital twin. And then the human biocapitalism market, where humans and their data become currency, that is going to go into full-blown operation. And there will be all kinds of bets made. This is called impact investing. The standardization of people will be the goal. And investors, hedge funds, all of these kinds of financial products and activities will be tied to, let's just say, predictions made as to how long it's going to take to standardize Jim Fetzer to this, that, or the other template. How long will it take to standardize Sophia? How long will it take to standardize the neighbor on the right side of Jim's house? How long will it take? And not just how long, but all, there are so many different ways you can bet on these changes that you're going to be making to human beings to get them to be what zombies, all right? And that is, there's biological changes, and then there are social changes, there are behavioral changes. This is called the Internet of Bodies, and it will be made possible by what they call surveillance capitalism. And yes, they are very interested in babies and children. They are doing this surveillance capitalism, it's starting, you know, prenatally in the womb. They are getting mothers to report on what kinds of choices they're going to make for the for when they raise their children. What kind of school do you plan to send him to? And then they're giving us, this is where Bitcoin and the cryptocurrencies come in. They will give you choices and clues and prods and suggestions, all coming through your digital devices, tied to your digital identity, and your incentive to report everything you're about to do and everything you're doing will be that as you deliver this data willingly, as you proffer and offer it, you will get dribbles of cryptocurrency in your crypto account. So you'll make money by letting them know everything that you're doing and you're going to do. And they will use those that data to offer you suggestions that will be enveloped in this phony term called sustainability. Well, you know, why don't you buy this kind of thing at the supermarket because it's more sustainable? Or why don't, if you're going to move to a house in another neighborhood, move to this type of dwelling? I mean, they're not going to give you much choice at all, but everything that is sustainable that you choose based on their suggestions, you will be paid for through cryptocurrency. So yeah, that is one of the big directions this is taking.
It's all very scary stuff, Sophia. And of course, they've created this pandemic mentality and reinforced by the media from every side and by pseudoscientists like Anthony Fauci, whom I refer to as Tony the Rat, who's done more damage to the United States than all of our foreign adversaries combined, Adolf Hitler, Joseph Stalin, Emperor Hirohito, and where Bill Gates appears to be a bit of the mastermind behind all of this absurdity. It is disgusting in the extreme. Please do continue.
Well, you know, one of the other things that they tell you on television is that this new COVID vaccine, boy, are they selling this thing as, you know, furiously as they can in all the TV programs, news shows, discussions, interviews. Anyway, so they're telling you that they simplify it tremendously. They say that this COVID vaccine will get your body to make spike proteins. and the spike proteins will protect you. Because antibodies are proteins, after all right? So what's interesting is that I know someone who's doing some very deep research now, and I'm just getting bits and pieces of it, but I'm going to throw some of it out here. You have heard all these other, let's just say, professionals who've come out on the internet talking about exosomes, right?
Yes.
All right. Well, an exosome has its reverse, its opposite, which is an endosome. And nobody is talking about endosomes. So I said to myself, well, exo just means from outside. Endo means inside. So I decided, I don't know why they're not mentioning endosomes, so I'm going to look into endosomes. Endosomes are the first stage of inflammatory response. Now, the body's, let's just call it the body's, it's direction book, the thing it does every single time it's injured, no matter how it's injured. If you inhale something and injury is caused to your mucosal membranes, throat, esophagus, the lungs, wherever the injury is caused, the body will go to inflammation as the first order of solution. Its first recourse is the inflammatory response. Whether somebody kicks you in the shin and you suffer a big bruise or a broken tibia or whatever, inflammatory response. So there's really only one disease, which is injury. Injury, oxidative stress, collapse, breakdown of cells and cell material from whatever cause, and then the inflammatory response follows. So endosomes are made by the cells within themselves as one of the first things in an inflammatory response. And endosomes work with lysosomes, and they digest and break down cellular debris, organic debris that nothing can be done with. So when you have a smashed shin with a bruise, the endosomes will be the first vacuum cleaners in the cells to break down that smashed organic tissue, right? Then there are all kinds of other sequences to this inflammatory process. A bunch of other cells follow. There are neutrophils, eosinophils, there are macrophages, there are all kinds of cells, and I call these the battalion cells. It's like the army is deployed. And I may have discussed this on one of your shows already, so I'm sorry if I'm repeating myself. But the
important points bear repetition. Go ahead.
Okay. So I call it the army. The body deploys the army. It says, hey, you cells that know exactly what to do, I need you to come in to this broken area and fix it. So all these battalions come in, and the beauty of it is that each battalion consumes and destroys and cleans up the battalion that came before it. And if the inflammatory process, the army part of it, isn't enough to repair the injuries and the damage that has occurred, then the Navy is called in. The Navy is the bloodstream, the big ocean, right? The Navy rides on the ocean. And the Navy consists of all kinds of organisms which inhabit your body to the tune of a quadrillion or more, bacteria and fungi. And these are the little ships and sailors of the Navy, and they come coursing down on the bloodstream. They are released into the bloodstream from the gut by the portal blood, carried by the portal blood. They also crawling on all your organ surfaces. So they are organisms within themselves sitting in your larger organism, right? And they are our, this is called actually endosymbiosis. The evolutionary biologist Lynn Margulis, wife of Carl Sagan, was one of the great founders of this idea of endosymbiosis, where we, as a very complex, high energy demanding species, we have outsourced certain kinds of work to other forms of life, because bacteria and fungi are not really from our kind of life kingdom. Bacteria come from their own life kingdom, and they live within us, and they do wondrous things, like they digest our food for us, but they're also the trash men of the body. So they're deployed in the bloodstream the Navy, and they come in and they start to eat up organic waste. They make a very toxic waste themselves, and their waste production keeps them in check. But if bacteria are given a massive buffet to eat of organic material, they will reproduce and reproduce and reproduce. Jim, they will also change shape. This is called pleomorphism. Bacteria, based on what they're eating from the particular smorgasbord area that they are sent to, can change their shape entirely, and they can go from being spiral to rod-shaped or cone-shaped. And this is where the traditional medical researchers have made a gargantuan error. When they look at somebody's blood under the microscope, a sick person's blood, and they see this spiral-shaped bacteria, they have mistakenly concluded that this is what caused that person to become ill. They don't realize that these bacteria are already living in the person, but they were a different form. And when they were sent, they were the Navy, being sent on the ocean of blood to this area of destruction. And based on the cellular material they were eating, they changed their shape and became a different kind of bacteria. So if bacterial waste doesn't keep the numbers of bacteria in check, and the blood takes up that slimy, toxic waste and transports it to other parts of your body, organs, for instance, you can become very ill. And this is why antibiotics work. You're taken to the hospital, and sometimes they work, and the hospital gives you a bunch of penicillin or ampicillin or whatever it happens to be, and the bacterial population is immediately reduced in your body, and your body has a chance to catch up, because those toxic wastes of bacteria can toxify you in a very fatal way, and this is called sepsis or septic shock. So back to the Navy. If the Army hasn't done the job fully of, you know, addressing injury within the body, and then the Navy comes and the bacteria of the Navy can't keep the injury, in spite of how much they're eating, the body can't catch up and fix everything. Then the Air Force is called in. The Air Force, in my view, are the exosomes. Now, endosome and exosome are generic terms. Exosomes can be all different kinds of things. And they are made by healthy cells because a call for help is given through gap junctions, through infrared signaling from sick cells to healthy cells. And the healthy cells go, all right, you need some help? Good. I'm making something for you. It's called an exosome. I'm going to push it out of me. It's going to have these spike proteins on it. It's going to travel on the bloodstream to you. And it is bioelectrical. It will confer charge because everything in biology rests on the availability of electrons and electricity. So viruses, these things they're calling viruses, have these spikes on them. And they are sent from cells to other cells. They are healing agents. They are the equivalent of the fuel tankers of the Air Force meeting up with a, you know, helicopter or some other kind of flying machine in the air and spilling fuel, energy, into that thing which is empty. So the cell that's dying receives an exosome on the bloodstream from cells that are healthy. And what these mRNA vaccines are doing is they are teaching our cells to make protein coronas, to make spike proteins. So they are teaching our cells to make exosomes, not the same ones and the good ones that we need to make, but different ones, and sending those exosomes out on the bloodstream where they then bump into other cells, and because of their spikes, they can get in through the cell membrane because there are these voltage-gated channels on the outside of the cell, and then they can go into the cell, and these foreign exosomes can then start giving new instructions, re-engineering each cell they reach.
Yes, yes, yes.
So, you know, this is how involved it is. All this study of viruses in virology now, At first, I used to think it was all senseless. These poor microbiologists and virologists are totally deluded. They're being lied to. But now I think that they are actually constructing learning how to make viruses that talk to the body in ways that the body has never used biological instruction language before.
Sophia, I love all that. I'm very keen on your talking about the sexual transformation issues because they are so stunning in and of themselves.
And I talked to you about this before, Jim. Is this what you're saying?
Well, during our own conversation, you know, not on the air.
Well, can you remind me of where you what I said and where you want to go?
Well, that was the idea
of blending the sexes,
creating basically a sexless version of humanity that would be completely different in terms of its evolutionary properties and what we have today.
Yeah, I mean, if they blur the genders, then right now we have two basic genders that have complementary, you know, critically complementary roles in reproduction, right? And if they feminize the men and masculinize the women, they're going to diminish the capabilities of each gender in this reproductive meeting. So they will basically sterilize people. And they have already written that the COVID vaccine can potentially sterilize women. I read this somewhere recently.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. We have multiple reports. Yes.
That
appears to be one of the objectives is, population reduction, sterility, and a host of other very unfortunate effects.
But one thing, I want to draw attention to the word reduction, population reduction. A lot of people think of that as numbers only because we've seen the Georgia Guidestones and their, you know, threatening message. But population reduction, Jim, this is a term that has been used for a long time. The Spaniards that colonized, the Southwest and Mexico and South America went, and the Catholic Church as well, they used the term reduction to refer to making the native populations Christian, Catholic, in particular, and turning them from, you know, nomads or whatever, rovers and roamers, into people who lived statically in one place and were farmers. So this was called reducing the Indians. And population reduction today is about standardizing us, reducing us, getting us to conform and submit and become docile and controllable. So population reduction isn't just about numbers. And yes, in terms of reproductive biology, blending and blurring the sexes amounts to a reduction of the efficacy of the distinct, discrete roles, the interplay of those two roles in human reproduction. And then that leaves reproduction to the state. It will have to be lab assisted. You will have to apply if you want to have a child. And they're also talking about, I think many years ago we talked about this, beyond the binary something. There was a very famous paper, I wish I could remember the name now, the title. I can look it up. But anyway, they have wombs, artificial wombs. And I'm not saying the word room with an R lisp. The artificial wombs in which state-bred infants will be, you know, incubated until such time as they can be birthed, whatever that means. I'll put quotes around that. And then they become the new human. This is the post-human. This is the transhuman. This is Homo evolutus as opposed to Homo sapien.
Sophia, as we get closer to our break at the top of the hour, I want to invite anyone to call in who'd like to speak with Sophia and me about these issues. The number 540-352-4452. Again, 540-352-4452. Mitchell will field your call and get you on the air. Meanwhile, Sophia and I will continue to discuss these matters, awaiting your call. Sophia, go ahead. You have a couple more minutes to finish your thoughts.
Yeah, and I'll just stay on the subject of the Amerindians for a minute. You know, when white technology, which was basically 1800s technology, came to the prairies of America, the horse Indians were not prepared to deal with things like watches and clocks that they saw, trains. The six gun, the repeater, the gun that repeated was beyond their comprehension. It took them a while to catch up with that concept. But surveyors, they considered these black magic, people with black magic, dark magic, that took their land away. So I made the parallel some months ago that we, ordinary human beings who go about our business in the world today, we cannot fathom how involved and precise nanobiotechnology is and how it has the capacity to invade us and do these things to our bodies that we wouldn't be able to dream up ourselves. And that's what caused the Amerindians to succumb. They just could not even contemplate what was happening to them because it was technological advancement that they were in the Stone Age.
Yes, it looks as though this idea of transforming humans into completely controllable entities is moving apace, if only it can be defeated outright, but where the massive propaganda onslaught is simply overwhelming. I want you to be sure to recommend what we can do about it, where we can learn more about it, including your resources, Sophia, your blog and the like, when we have the opportunity as we proceed. Now it's just a few moments before the break. Would you like a concluding thought now before we take that break?
Well, I'll just say this, that I'll read from my July-August newsletter, which was devoted to Comanches, part of it. And then I wrote another September-October newsletter. I read 12 books on Comanches and Apaches and whatnot. It was incredible. It was a re-education completely. So I will say this. Oh, here comes the music. I can't say it, Jim. Oh, well.
Well, you'll be able to say it after the break.
Yes.
Hold that thought, Sophia. We'll be right back with our special guest, Sophia Smallstorm. Call in if you have questions.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job? That Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Look, you stupid bastard. You've got no arms left.
Yes, I have.
Look.
It's just a flesh wound.
I don't believe I've seen such a display of courage, skill, nerve, grace, and stupidity.
I'll do you for that.
Oh, what?
Come here.
What are you going to do, bleed on me?
I'm invincible.
You're a loony.
The Black Knight always triumphs.
Roundtable Live, Monday through Friday, 1 a.m. till 4 a.m. Eastern Time. Bring your mind, bring your ideas, bring your voice. King Arthur had nothing on us. Here, Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs, but there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out "And Nobody Died in Boston Either." Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Sophia, before you finish your thoughts and we take our first caller, Mitchell has turned up a very thematic article just published by Zero Hedge. France says it's developing bionic super soldiers because everyone else is doing it. A report published Tuesday by the French Military Ethics Committee has indicated that the country has begun to develop technology for bionically enhanced soldiers. The report discussed conditions in which devices like implants can be used to improve soldier performance on the battlefield. Quote, human beings have long sought ways to increase their physical or cognitive abilities in order to fight wars. Possible advances could ultimately lead to capacity enhancement being introduced into soldiers' bodies, the report said, according to the BBC. It also added that maintaining clear ethical lines would be important in the development of bionic soldiers. That's quite an understatement. Your thoughts and complete before we take our first caller.
Well, Jim, I'm reading a book right now about Louis Zamperini, who survived a horrible accident. He was part of the Army Air Corps. This is before the Air Force. And I was shocked that in World War II, the equivalent of the Air Force, there were so many deaths and so many failures, mechanical failures, navigational failures of pilots, that only 1 out of 5 AAC members actually survived. And the most of the most of the deaths and the casualties were not combat related at all. I mean, the rate of particularly B-24 failures, just horrible. So the construction of planes and whatnot back then was so bad that this book summarizes it in one line: life was cheap. And now they're doing the opposite. They started at basically negative, below zero, and now they're going to way above zero. And it's all about enhancement and perfecting not only the survivability of soldiers, but the nature of who they are. This is all DARPA.
Yes, yes, DARPA's played a leading role. The Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, which uses American taxpayer money to develop all kinds of technological devices, many of which appear to have uses contrary to the best interests of the public who are financing them.
But again, Jim, I just want to say one thing. I don't know when people are going to call in. This book that I'm reading is very interesting. It was written by Laura Hillenbrand, who wrote the immensely well-researched book and well-written book, Seabiscuit, about the racehorse. And she's written this book about Zamperini called Unbroken. And honestly, it's not a well-written book. It's actually terrible, but I'm plowing through it because it's interesting anyway. And I'm just surprised. You were in the Marine Corps. I'm surprised at the mindset of what these guys were like. They I know, were looking at death at any moment, even in training, because the planes they were flying and their, you know, navigational, whatever you call it, the software, because I can't think of anything else, was poor. So they could die at any minute. And they did, they played so many pranks all the time. They drank and they played pranks and they trained and they fought. And one of these typical behaviors was to take the carbon dioxide out of the flotation vests so that they could have bubbly drinks. And they depleted CO2 in so many of these vests that when the vests had to be used, they didn't work. So they basically endangered each other. And I can't comprehend that.
Well, the moral and ethical issues that are raised by all of this are quite profound, and they seem to be grossly abusive, because the fundamental principle of morality is to treat other persons with respect and never merely as means, which is obviously the case in murder, robbery, kidnapping, rape, using other people as means. Mike Sparks, whom I featured on the show, who's been an advisor to the military in the development of equipment, recommended before the invasion of Iraq, before the invasion of Iraq, the importance of using tracked vehicles rather than wheeled vehicles, because wheeled vehicles would be vulnerable to attacks by improvised explosive devices, and many, many troops would lose arms and legs. He was overruled by a general who wanted troops to lose arms and legs so they could develop more in the area of robotics. I mean, how outrageous is that, Sophia? Just disgusting beyond belief.
It's horrible. I mean, this is where that three-word sentence comes into play again. Life is cheap. For these people, life is cheap. And for the Bill Gates of the world and the Faucis and these experimental vaccines that invade our biology and take over and cannot be erased and cannot be withdrawn, life is cheap. They're so anxious to see us become transhuman, become Borgs, that they can't wait. They're rolling out all these vaccine deliveries now, and guess who's going to get it first in San Diego? The Navy.
Well, I'm very worried about the deleterious effects of the vaccine. That's a terrible idea. I mean, I think these vaccines are going to do tremendous harm. I've just published on my blog, by the way, at jamesfetzer.org, a survey of the adverse consequences of 83 different vaccines, which are well known. They're identified by their brand names and where the the labels, their instructions, point out the adverse effects that occur from their use. I mean, it's staggering, Sophia, staggering, at jamesfetzer.org. We do have our first caller standing by, Bruce from Texas. Bruce, join the conversation with Sophia and me.
Yes, it's quite an honor. I don't believe I ever spoken to Sophia Smallstorm before.
Oh, well, I hope you like what I say and that I stand up to what you expect.
Yeah, every time I hear you on a show, I think to myself, where are all the educated, well-spoken, and politically independent-minded women like yourself? They're very hard to find. You're quite a unique person.
Well, thank you. So yeah. What would you like to talk about?
Yeah, I don't want to derail. I just want to put this out there, and then I need to get off the phone, but I'll listen off the air. The anniversary of Sandy Hook just passed, and I want to thank you for your work on it, and Jim as well. Do y'all have any thoughts on that date?
Well, it's interesting you raise that question, Bruce, because Kamala Harris has just come out with a declaration that in honor of the victims of Sandy Hook, the Biden-Harris administration is going to be very aggressive in their gun control agenda, in spite of the fact that after all the riots and looting with Antifa, Black Lives Matter, all the efforts of the Democrats to defund or dismantle the police, every citizen of the United States recognizes the importance of being able to defend yourself and your home. So this is just a lunatic agenda. In fact, we even have a recording where Joe Biden, and it appears to be the body double that they're promoting so aggressively, was acknowledging that the country, the Democrats, were wiped out across the country because of their slogan of defunding the police, and he never wanted to hear it again. So I believe it did have catastrophic effects. The best I can put together is Trump won by like about 73-74 million votes to Biden having 23 or 24. So they were making up with the Dominion voting machines, more than 50 million fabricated votes, turning Trump votes into Biden votes, vanishing Trump votes, and even printing. They have the Dominion machines have their own printer, so they can actually print ballots to have them, you know, make the outcome any way they want. They can weight the vote so that the Democrat vote is weighted 1.3 and the Republican 0.7, and then the total weights come out to equal to 2, except that they're being distributed in a certain way. But I don't want to preclude, you know, Sophia's further thoughts about all of this. I think that gun control, in my opinion, is a done deal. But they're threatening that if they get in office, they'll be doing these things by executive order, circumventing Congress and the will of the people, which they claim is being overturned by opposing the results of the election with these fabricated votes and these controllable machines that, you know, brought us a verdict completely the opposite of the will of the people. Sophia.
Hey, Jim.
Yeah.
Oh. Go ahead. You know, just real quick point, you know, that fractional voting gag by the Dominion software, that's essentially applying the three-fifths compromise that made slaves less than one whole person. They're making Trump voters less than one whole person.
well, there's another.
I think it's kind of ironic, you know.
That's good, Bruce. There's another parallel with the Civil War, because in the Dred Scott decision of 1857, Dred Scott, who was a slave who'd made his way to a free state, the Supreme Court declined to hear his appeal on the basis of standing, just as they have referred the Texas case, which is supported by 21 other states, on the basis of standing. And I'm terribly concerned that they're paving the way for a new civil war that could have been circumvented and avoided if only the Supreme Court had performed its constitutionally delegated responsibility of arbitrating disputes between the states, where clearly Texas had an interest in the impropriety of the other states using Dominion voting machines, because it leads to an election of a president whose policies are going to be massively detrimental to the citizens of Texas, they should have taken the case. And I am in a state of deploring the Supreme Court for its failure to do so. This is utterly outrageous, really, truly disgusting. Sophia, your thoughts? Sophia? Mitchell, did we lose Sophia?
No, I was on mute.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Sure. I honestly think that they're going to be shaping everybody's behavior through this biocapitalism and all of their sustainable suggestions. And one day they will tie guns to not being sustainable, because that's the new umbrella of everything now. And COVID has become part of it. And Biden, in the, you know, as you, at the end of the day, Biden will be thought of as more sustainably inclined than Trump. And this brainwashing they're doing, using this sustainability vocabulary on the whole world, is, this is the technocracy, this is the biggest tool they have to send us into technocracy. And their manifest destiny all has to do with sustainability. And it's all fraudulent.
Yeah, I want to invite Mitchell to join the conversation, because I know he is.
Very well, guys. Thank you, Sophia, for taking my call.
Bruce, nice talking to you. You're welcome to stick around, but I'm very glad you called.
No, I have to work.
Okay. Thanks, Mitchell.
Okay.
Thanks, Bruce. Thanks a lot. Mitchell, mm-hmm. I like your piece about France developing bionic soldiers. You have further thoughts along these lines?
Well, you know, we're seeing a shift back to, technological eugenics. I mean, I don't know what you want to describe it, but, you know, as Sophia pointed out, you know, what they're doing essentially is reprogramming our DNA. And, you know, I was musing in the chat room that said, you know, what are we going to have to get monthly updates, you know, from Bill Gates for every vaccine and everything? I just hope they don't have any software conflicts.
Well, get this. Here's an NBC doctor. People shouldn't travel or be liberated from wearing masks until next summer, even if they had been vaccinated. I mean, this is just monstrous. And as I have been reporting here, the masks are doing tremendous damage to human beings and other living things. When they cite doctors in ORs, those are for short periods of time, not for long. They dispose of their masks when they leave the operating room, where the operating room is provided with additional oxygen because of what they're losing by virtue of rebreathing oxygen-depleted air, which brings about brain damage, strain on the cardiovascular system, and a host of other very deleterious effects, where the predictions are now having it that we're going to have a whole generation of brain-damaged children, and it's going to be happening in the near future, and that we're going to have an outbreak of dementia because older folks wearing are also being harmed massively. Sophia, I think the risks just from the mask wearing alone are monstrous and overwhelming.
Jim, what I don't understand is how people are putting up with this. It's not pleasant to wear a mask. It feels terrible. It gives you a headache. I had a friend who was training for a new temporary job. He told me that he almost passed out on his first day of work wearing a mask. And he's a very big, strong guy, and he could not bear it. So I don't understand how all these people are, you know, trotting around wearing masks, and they don't complain about it.
It's got something to do with crowd behavior, groupthink, subjected to massive propaganda, believing falsely they're doing something that is beneficial to themselves and other Americans when it's precisely the opposite. So, Mitchell, your thoughts about, you know, the willingness to comply in this instance?
Well, you know, Jim, I'm here in kind of South Central Virginia, and but near Martinsville, Virginia, and you know, we don't have how should I say this? Yeah, in the cities, there seems to be a higher mask rate than out here in the rural areas. And, you know, it's funny because you can look at the people in the store and you can see the ones that aren't wearing a mask. And, you know, you can see that, I don't want to say it, there seem to be healthy, happy, and sound. And the ones that are wearing the masks actually seem to be caught in this fear pandemic more than anything.
Yes. Well, I certainly agree that fear, you know, when you're confronted with something that induces fear, you tend to lose your ability to reason clearly. And we seem to have a mass of this taking place now. I'm very disturbed. Even members of my own family seem to have, you know, been drawn into the mass or good, Tony the Rat and Bill Gates, which I find, of course, personally very distressing. But there it is, right? I've got to cope with it and do my best. But they're not willing to be responsive, even when I share with them studies that reveal the damage that masks inflict, where there must be a half a dozen or more on my blog, even as I speak, that make that point. Sophia, your observations.
Well, you know, as Mitch said, in the rural areas, it's not as much of a thing as it is in the urban areas. And I will tell you, since they did the first lockdown, and now we have like a semi-lockdown at this time, sort of more tepid one. In California, every city where they, if you can imagine like the main drag in a small suburban city, and they have like the art fests going on, and they have all these banners, colorful banners hanging from street lights, you know, saying, oh, art fest, August 20th to 28th or whatever. They have the equivalent of these banners advertising and advising to wear masks. We wear masks in Carlsbad. Encinitas, masks save lives. So this stuff is literally hanging in your face in all colors and big banners and things. And so people are doing it because it's in their face all the time. And they're doing it out of consideration for others. People who don't like to wear masks have told me, oh, I'm doing it out of respect for others.
Yeah, sure. Respect when you're damaging yourself and it really conforming to what is damaging, especially to young people, to children, developing infants. We have leading experts describing what's going on here by masking children for long periods of time as a criminal act. And I think they're completely right. We have a caller now from California. Paul, join the conversation with Sophia Smallstorm, me, and Mitchell.
Yeah, thank you. You know, as far as just the most recent comment about respect, this is something that I've encountered for quite a while now. And I don't always have the most aggressive response to it, but a lot of times my response is very, very assertive, and I immediately go, well, what are you respecting? I mean, a fraud? Are you respecting other people's irrational fears? Are you respecting lowering your oxygen, increasing your CO2, increasing your cortisol? Are you respecting conformity? I mean, this drives me nuts, and I've probably said this to at least a dozen or so people going back a couple of months. As a matter of fact, I had a very interesting conversation just last night with a young man. He was probably in his mid to late 20s, and we were both in front of the water store getting water from the vending machine. I was just finishing up, and the store's not open, so again, you know, we're outside, and when he gets out of his car, he puts his mask on to go up to get the water from the vending machine, and I said, hey, you know, you don't have to wear the mask here. We're not going inside the store. I just say stuff like that to people, It's kind of just the way I do it. And he kind of gives me a funny look, right? And then he sort of says, well, do you have a problem with wearing masks? I go, well, in general, I do. I mean, it's obviously an individual thing. I don't wear one because it's ridiculous and there's nothing to be afraid of. There's no virus. So I said, even if there is a virus, if you listen to what they tell you, it doesn't make you sick, right? I said, if they tell you that 80% of the time or more, the people that so-called test positive don't have symptoms, then how can you say there's a correlation to illness, much less a causality? And he's like, yeah, that's a good point. Anyway, it went on, and he ended up telling me, well, he put the mask on because he's got to go down to the store, which is just like three or four doors down to buy groceries, and he's got to wear the mask inside. And I go, no, you don't. That's grocery outlet. I know the manager well. He's actually on my side. He wears a mask because he has to from his corporate bosses, but he essentially will not say anything, nor will his employees. So I go in there all the time without a mask. And just a couple minutes more, you know, we went into some various things. I mentioned the broader aspects of the conspiracy, but the key point that he made was this, is he was quite open. And he goes, you know, my mom says the same kind of stuff all the time. I go, well, you should listen to your mom. And it turns out he was Middle Eastern. He was Persian. And these people in general, I found to be much more open than a lot of regular, like what you call white Americans, to this idea. Just in a brief comment on what Sophia said about when she found out that these people in the Army Air Corps were depleting their carbon dioxide to make their to put into their drinks, and she said this perplexed or boggled her mind. I forget the exact word that she used, and I immediately wanted to react and say, well, apparently you've never worked with blue collar guys or been around a bunch of jocks. I didn't realize until I became an adult that most people are morons, and essentially this whole masking ritual has proven this to me in spades, and it's sad but true in my opinion.
Well, I just want to say, Paul, I don't know if you're the Paul whose email list I'm on, or are you a different Paul?
No, that's me, Sophia. Hi.
Hi. It's been such a long time. So good. I'm so glad it's you. All right. So Jim, this is a very special Paul. This is not an ordinary Paul. All right.
Well, I know well, so he is a regular caller to the show.
Okay. Well, good. I haven't talked to Paul. I met him at Conspiracy Con. All right. So Paul, what boggled me about, I know people are morons. I know guys when they get together, they have this crazy like prank mentality. And
Sophia, you're gonna have to hang on, hold that thought, to continue your conversation with Paul after this break. We'll be right back.
Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back after this message.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven. Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
Hello, my My name is Mr. Rowe. I am the host of Reality Extraction. On Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, I utilize logic, intellect, and magic to methodically autonomize, vivisect, analyze, examine, study, scrutinize, and extract an essence of reality from a fog of illusion and confusion. You can find me on Studio B every Thursday at 1700 hours Pacific Time. That's 8 p.m. Eastern. No topic taboo, no subject too strange. I strive to take a neutral standpoint during the dissection of the topic at hand. That's Reality Extraction with Mr. Rowe on Revolution Radio.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Sophia, continue your conversation with Paul. We do have one or two more callers, but I'll keep Paul on, as is frequently the case. Go ahead and respond.
Yeah, I was just saying, what struck me as so crazy is that they were taking carbon dioxide out of life-saving flotation vests. I mean, you can't be such a moron that you don't think ahead to the possibility that somebody could need this vest sometime, and if it doesn't have CO2 in it, it's not going to work. It's not going to save anybody's life. They're going to die. I mean, are they that moronic?
We're getting a repetition. Someone has a show on in the background. If you're here on the talk line, then just turn off or turn down your show in the background. Paul, go ahead and reply.
Right. Well, I mean, that question really can't be answered. But what I will say is that at the very beginning of the show, it's funny when Sophia, when you talked about the fact that you're not a microbiologist or you're not a virologist and so on and so forth, I had to chuckle just a little bit because I'm fond of telling people that I'm a college dropout. But to me, you know, it's like the logic that I used on this kid yesterday got him to open his eyes, because I said, and I've said this to multiple people, okay, well, how many days a year are you actually sick where you don't feel well? You know, two or three? And, you know, he says, oh, well, some years I'm not sick at all. I said, yeah, precisely. So where's the virus then? Is it just taking the day off? I mean, this is the idea that people can't seem to get through their heads. Is, I mean, the average person, if you take a 10-year period, if they're sick 10 days a year, that's 100 days. And most people are not sick 10 days a year. Well, that still leaves 3,550 days that they're not sick. So where's the virus then? Like I said, is it on hiatus? Is it just waiting? It picks and chooses the day that's going to make you sick? The whole thing is absurd. I can't stand it. It really, it's a combination of infuriating and depressing, because what I've seen more than anything is, at least here in California, in the Bay Area where I am, is I see a lot of spineless, stupid people. And the ones that actually believe you and know and agree with many of the things you say, and I do meet them, they still wear their masks. And this is really, really hard to, you know, to just wrap my head around, but it's just, it's the way it is. And I don't think that, just real quickly before we go on to another caller, there's a guy by the name of Jeff Berwick, and he has a great, I guess, show you call it, called The Dollar Vigilante. And he made a great video just the other day, and in it he included a survey he did among his own followers where he asked them, how long is it going to be before people wake up? And he gave them a choice of 1 year, 2 years, 5 years, or never. And 68% of his respondents said never. I don't know if that's high, but I think it's, shall we say, not that far off.
Well, Sophia was suggesting, Paul, there's a time when showing your face is going to be viewed as obscene, just as taking off your swimsuit at a beach. I mean, that's just ridiculous beyond belief. We have a caller from the Revolution Radio chat room who uses the handle Dirt. Dirt, join the conversation.
Yes, I had my phone muted. Thank you. Yes, our show is on Studio B, too. We do a gardening show tomorrow after Mona. My wife and I do a gardening show, as I said. But I wanted to go back to exosomes being a generic term, what viruses are, the genetic code, the A, C, T, and G. Are you familiar with any of your studies? And there was another thing, the delivery system of one of the vaccines that has three needles.
Electroporation,
Yes, yes, the two needles that will open up the cell, and then the other one that's injecting mRNA. That's an interesting system right there. Are you familiar with the tobacco mosaic virus?
Yes, I'm the one who brought this out in this context. They are using tobacco plants to grow the viruses, because tobacco mosaic virus is bioelectric. And this is another thing. All the people out there who are in conventional medicine and even in alternative commentary on conventional medicine are failing to register the importance of bioelectricity. So everything in our body is dependent on bioelectricity. Biochemistry, I would say, is even secondary to bioelectricity, because it's the furnishing of electrons that keep you going. You know, just like when the power is out in your house, modern life, you can't do much, right? So biological life, when the power is out and electrons are in short supply, that's when you start to fail. You start to get sick. So they have discovered now that tobacco mosaic virus, which is the first virus ever studied, and let's use virus context.
It has about 160 DNA, it has like 160, and it was the first one to be decoded as well.
Right. But let's use virus in a non-specific way. Let's consider viruses as letters of the alphabet. Okay?
Right.
They're not.
Right.
We're not talking about anything that causes disease. It's just a thing. So tobacco mosaic virus, when in the industrial applications they have discovered, let's call it gunk that occurs on tobacco plant leaves, and not just tobacco, it's on eggplants, it's on tomatoes, it's this brown material that causes the leaves to crinkle. And they took this to be a diseased condition of the plant, although nothing kills the plant when it has these crinkly spots on its leaves. It never dies, so it's not fatal or lethal to the plant. So Wikipedia, under TMV, we're still getting that echo, so whoever's...
Yeah, I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's not me. I know it's not me.
Okay, so this is under investigational uses or other applications of tobacco mosaic virus. Due to its cylindrical shape, high aspect ratio, self-assembling nature, and ability to incorporate metal coatings like nickel and cobalt into its shell, tobacco mosaic virus is an ideal candidate.
You can put it on like a shelf.
Yes,
like a
let me
shelf.
Continue, please. Let me finish. Tobacco mosaic virus is an ideal candidate.
I have knowledge of it, too. I've been studying it.
All right. If you're going to let me read, I would appreciate it.
I don't think he could quite hear you, Sophia. That's all.
Yeah. I mean, maybe it's that delay. But some people just talk over. And so I'm trying to get this out because it's very important. I apologize. TMV is an ideal candidate to be incorporated into battery electrodes. Addition of TMV to a battery electrode increases the reactive surface area by an order of magnitude, resulting in an increase in the battery's capacity by up to 6 times. So this tells you that whatever viruses are, they're highly bioelectrical. And this mRNA material that's being carried into the cells by electroporation, those two electrodes on the triple needle vaccination insertion mechanism, those two side needles produce a voltage that opens pores on the cells. This is why it's called electroporation. And so the material in the syringe gets in more easily, and the cell's capacity to receive this is amplified. So this is what's so dangerous. They actually understand bioelectricity in nanobiotech, but other people in conventional medicine don't have a clue about it. So all of these spike proteins that are generated as a consequence of this new material coming into the cell, which is recognized by the cell as an endosome, potentially the cell thinks it's made it itself, and the instructions are to coat the endosome with spike proteins, corona proteins, and then send it out. So what's happening is the endosome is, this is my theory, being turned into an exosome, and is then set loose throughout the bloodstream to go bump into other cells, open the voltage-gated pores on them, get in, and self-replicate.
Serious. Go ahead, Paul.
Just briefly, my experience with exosomes was quite interesting. So last year, 2019, I was taking care of my elderly dad. He was 93, and he was having a lot of issues and, you know, multiple visits to the hospital, mostly for dehydration. But I took him to this one doctor, and I was asking about, you know, because I'd heard about stem cells and so forth, and he recommended we try exosomes. So he had a treatment. And I got to tell you, it was amazing. For about a day and a half, the way he sold it to me is, okay, they're going to stay in the body, they're going to do these things, and you might not notice anything for a couple of weeks, and then they'll kick in, and they'll probably last a few months. So I was looking forward to that. Well, let me tell you something. Within a day to a day and a half, he was like a new Energizer bunny. I mean, he was talkative, unlike before. And he had all these, he started making plans. Okay, well, let's do this. I want to go to the store. I'm going to do this. He just started the next day almost making a list of stuff that he wanted to get and things he wanted to do. And I was like, wow, I couldn't believe it. And then within a week to week and a half, it wore off. And it kind of just makes me think about it. He probably just got a nice jolt of communicative electricity.
Right, or of electricity in general, which is what, I mean, this is why they use TENS units to, you know, as therapeutic measures when you're injured, because the muscles are given voltage or whatever's in the body that's not going right. You know, it's theorized that when you chew, your teeth, which are crystalline in nature, they generate voltage that travels. Each tooth is linked to an organ, and that energizes the organ that tooth pertains to. And we have 32 teeth for a certain reason. And then they pull our wisdom teeth, which I believe, if this theory is correct, are backup batteries in case we lose molars or other original teeth. But here's the thing about tobacco mosaic virus. By the way, British American Tobacco has the contract to make this base material for these mRNA vaccines, because tobacco mosaic virus is full of nanoparticles and self-replicating. It's the first self-assembling protein structure that they ever described, as that other caller said. And it's the first the virions are the infectious particles in the virus, okay? And tobacco mosaic viruses, virions, make them ideal as antigen carriers. So the tobacco mosaic virus is like the bus or the taxi cab that carries this new material, this, I'll call it, non-human material, into the cell.
That's the point I was going to make.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is Dirt. Yes, go ahead, Dirt.
Yes, there's about 50 trillion cells in the in the body, and there's 10 times that amount of foreign cells, as you mentioned earlier in the show, although it's only 10% of our weight because a human cell is larger. And the tobacco mosaic virus, basically those 160 DNA is the blueprint for a protein shell, the rod-shaped protein shell, and you can add stuff into it. And then through electrophoresis, you can actually introduce that into a cell, and then it takes over the machinery, like you were saying. So, and also plants and bacteria, they also have viruses. They're called phages in bacteria.
Yes, viruses are, again, exosomes, whether you call them exosomes or whatever you want to call them, they are a very standard component of biology. Mm-hmm. And exogenous viruses, the popular theory is that exogenous viruses, meaning viruses that exist and occur outside the human body, let's use polio as an example. Ponds, streams, swimming pools were supposedly full of polio virus that was going to make you sick and crippled. The fact is that viruses are endogenous. Our bodies make them, and they're part of the inflammatory process, and they're healing agents. They're materials
and
that can
so the endocrine. The endocrine system, it puts out insulin and exosomes and adrenaline from the kidneys. The adrenal glands are located on the kidneys. The pituitary gland puts out exosomes that regulate due body functions. It's a generic term, as you mentioned, as you said earlier in the show.
Yes. I mean, it's as generic, you could say, as consonants and vowels. Let's say people get all excited because they found a new consonant. Well, consonants and vowels are simply two different types of pieces of the alphabet. But when you are told what a consonant is, you don't have a clue as to how consonants and vowels can combine and make words, and words make language, and language conveys thought. So this is the world of exosomes and endosomes and all the components in the body. They're part of the biological language.
It's fascinating. It really is. I find it fascinating. In spite of their evil intent, I find biology fascinating.
Yeah.
And awesome. I really do. Thank you for putting some light on these subjects. I'm going to drop off the phone now. Thank you, Jim. You're one of my heroes.
Thank
you. I told you that before.
thank you for calling in, Dirt. Excellent, excellent. Paul.
Okay, thank you.
Quickly, if I can stay on this concept of electricity or bioelectricity, I'm sure Sophia is probably familiar with Dr. Jerry Tennant and some of his work. And over the years, I've recommended Healing is Voltage. It was a 24-minute video on YouTube, and I've probably told at least 30 or 40 people over the years to watch that video. But I have personally seen with my own eyes, especially with my own father, come back to life just by getting saline solution in the hospital. And if, you know, the other thing, too, about good, fresh, quality food, I've read years ago, and I'm just assuming it's true, that it's electron donors, whereas over-processed, overcooked, you know, so-called dead, devitalized food ends up being electron stripper in the body.
Yeah.
And I think for my own life, I can personally testify how great I felt sometimes by just having a big serving of some fresh fruit or fresh vegetables. Literally, it just is a lift.
Yep. Processed foods are electron poor because in all the processing, the electrons are drummed out of them. That kind of makes sense. Maybe it's an oversimplification. And whole foods are electron rich. Now, another way you can get electrons is from sunlight. So you have to have exposure to sunlight. And, you know, shrouding yourself in a mask and staying home, this is all going to contribute to people's biological failure over time.
Precisely. Yes.
Yes, precisely.
But people have to have the sense to figure this out. You know, the people who are homebound, who are freaking out, well, go outside and drop your mask for 10 minutes or forever. But if people don't have the sense to figure it out, then how can we save them, right?
Sophia, something that's astonished me, say, for example, in California. California has always been fitness-oriented. You know, if you're not a vegan, if you're not getting exercise, if you're not out and about, you're not a real American in California. And yet they're accepting all this nonsense. I know there are protests here and there, but it ought to be obvious. Not getting out, being locked down in your home, not even being allowed fresh air, not getting exercise is detrimental to your health. It's going to have profound long-term effects. And I don't hear this being addressed anywhere, even though it's as obvious as could be.
Jim, I live in Southern California, which is particularly, you know, exercise crazy. And people, when the first lockdown happened, everybody was out walking, jogging, riding their bikes. I saw so many more runners and walkers outside than I had ever seen before. And bike riders. I mean, it was the only thing we could do. And then a lot of people have weights and little things at home, and they do things. They're doing things online. There's yoga classes you can watch, and then you do the same in front of your computer or phone. So there's a lot of online classes, and people weren't missing the exercise. What's really driving, I feel very bad for the children who are on swim team and the adolescents, you know, the teenagers who are on football teams. The team practices have been pretty much eradicated. And those kids were getting enormously depressed.
All the ramifications thereof. I mean, all this lockdown, isolation, imprisoned in our own home. Yeah, domestic abuse increasing, child abuse is increasing, suicides are increasing, students not able to interact with their other students are getting very massively depressed. Some are committing suicide even when they're in a classroom interacting. We know it's a failure to use a computer as a mechanism of instruction. We got the rate of failure of classes is just becoming astronomical. These horrendous consequences are unbelievable, and no one seems to be taking them into account. It's terrible. Fauci, Tucker is a complete disaster. Gates, a monster. These are criminals to the entire world. They have to be prosecuted, tried, and hung or shot. I mean, it's too soon. Is yesterday would not be soon enough.
Jim,
Okay, just real quickly, yeah, just mentioning about, you know, the children. Yeah, this is quite distressing to me. I see parents doing this to their kids all the time. But speaking about the outdoor exercise and all that, so, Sophia, if you saw what I've seen, it's so combination heart-wrenching and infuriating. There's a pretty successful, well-known gymnastics and dance academy not far from where I live near a major shopping center. And they have now, for many weeks, moved all their equipment, including mats, out into the parking lot. And all the kids are out there doing their thing with masks on in the parking lot. This is the level of insanity that these people have foisted upon us. Go ahead.
I know, and I've seen nail salons. I thought a nail salon was moving to another location, and then when I looked again, I realized they put all their stuff outside, and people are having their toenails done and their hair cut. And it's crazy. This is humiliation. Humiliation. And people are putting up with it, and I think a lot of people think this is temporary. Well, if we just go along with the orders and the mandates, we'll be done with this sooner. It'll be over sooner. And they don't realize that it's now, it's not going away. This is convention, the formation of conventions, new conventions.
Yeah, right. That's correct. That's right. It's the boiling frog approach. If you only increase the temperature 1 degree at a time, the frog is cooked before he knows it.
Yep.
Yeah. And that's one of the most important and one of the more pertinent observations that you and others have made, is this is not going away. I said this early on when I heard Gavin Newsom give his little noontime on Good Friday little talk about flattening the curve just till April 7th.
I told people they're not going to let this go. This is total bullshit, and they're going to continue this as long as they can get away with it. You know, and this is pretty early on, and, you know, most people just looked at me like, oh, okay, there's Paul again talking his nonsense. Yeah, okay, so.
Well, it's okay, Paul, because the people who are awake to this, I hope that the cracks will fill in. There will be more and more of us as some get impatient. I mean, I see it's this particular lockdown that we have in California, you know, this 3 weeks because they don't want people enjoying Christmas. They've closed all the non-essential stores so that those poor store owners can't. They were looking forward to resuscitating themselves over the Christmas, you know, holiday shopping time. They can't do it now. And this three-week period, I have to say, if it's going to be more than 3 weeks, I wouldn't be surprised. But the streets are as busy as ever, full of cars. I see stores that are open in defiance. I think this is remarkable because the first time around, people were much more compliant.
Yeah, I'm not sure I see the same thing. I maybe have to get around a little bit more. I've kind of curtailed my, you know, activities, if you will. But I hope you're right. Again, I think this also occurs at much higher levels. I'm reminded of what a good friend of mine that was extremely Catholic used to say. And, you know, he always used to tell me starting back in the 90s, before I became extremely, what you call, Jew aware, he always used to tell me, they're anti-human. They're anti-God. You know, they want to make themselves gods on the earth. And when you think about the people that are pushing this agenda, it's not a normal human thought process. I mean, anybody here on this call would think of these things to do to humanity in general? No. So I think it's worth bearing in mind the probably centuries-old battle between a certain group of people and the rest of humanity and what their agenda is.
Paul, I'm very glad you called in, particularly since you and Sophia have a prior relationship to correspondence. She's obviously delighted you're here. Sophia, I've been very happy to have you and look forward to having you back. As we close our conversation, would you share where others can learn more about your work, your blogs, that sort of thing?
Yes, thank you, Jim. My online store, avatarproducts.com, I always bring in new things to simple things, inexpensive things, ways that people can improve their health and resilience, and sell a lot of iodine, a lot of magnesium. When you start boosting your biology in these very subtle but very critical ways, you will feel better. You will think more clearly. You will feel more like yourself. And that's what we're losing. We're losing our original self, the feeling of being ourselves, being intact, you know. So that, and then there's my newsletter you can subscribe to. My blog is sophiasmallstorm.com. I've had a lot of stuff going on lately, so I haven't posted much in the last couple of weeks, but I'll get busy again. There's a little icon for how to get the newsletter there as well.
So good. It's safe having you here. Thanks to Paul and Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening to Revolution.